Welcome to the Muscle Expert Podcast with Ben Pakulski, one of the world's top professional bodybuilders, an expert on human performance and mindset mastery. Ben dives deep to deliver the strategies of the top experts to upgrade your body, mind, muscle, strength, performance, biochemistry, and how to become the upgraded modern man. Join us on BenPakulski.com to learn the cutting-edge techniques to take control of your body, your brain, and create your greatest life.
Hey everybody, this is Troy McClain, and I'm a special introduction of the Muscle Expert Podcast with my guy Ben. And I asked him to give me the honor to introduce you guys because I have to tell you, I've literally traveled the world. I've worked with, met with, negotiated for or against, and even received restraining orders from the likes of, I'm not even lying, from the likes of Donald Trump, Warren Buffett, Bill Gates, Carlos Sims, Mark Cuban, Dr. Tommy Ahlquist. These guys are Ryan DeLuca from bodybuilding.com. And I, for me, in all sincerity and all honesty, this morning when I got to work out with Ben, I met the Bill Gates of fitness. And I say that in all sincerity.
Thank you, man.
You and I totally, absolutely synergistically hit it off. And we started talking about rite of passage for men, and it was awesome.
Yeah, so we had this amazing conversation over lunch about why potentially the personification of mediocrity is so rampant in North American society, in Western culture. Why are we all living this life, and why are we all condoning and promoting mediocrity? Why is everybody living this life of inadequacy, and everybody's ultimately unhappy? Talk about that, man. Like, how much does that have to do with the rite of passage thought process?
So you and I were talking this morning about it, and for me, these are all just my opinions. And first, everybody has to know that, like, I'm super unapologetic about being God-fearing. I'm very unapologetic about that. I'm unapologetic about being an entrepreneur and loving the fact that I'm patriotic for my country. And I think anybody should be patriotic for their country.
Yeah.
But what I am sad to see and hear, and we were talking about growing up, the way that people grow up. Growing up with adversity creates greatness. Growing up without adversity creates a certain amount of mediocrity. But when we have the neutering of the American entrepreneur that's happening.
I love that term, it's so true.
Dude, it's the neutering of the American entrepreneur. And I sincerely want to say thank you again. You guys need to know that I met this gentleman through a mutual friend named Bedros. And Bedros, how I met him is because I follow an honor-based and principle-based commitment to my fellow man. I believe in the laws of reciprocity. I believe that you should have the attitude of a servant, not a salesperson. I met Bedros when he came into Boise, Idaho, and somebody had asked me to show him around. And I said, sure, I'll show him around. Then they asked me to give him an experience that maybe he had never experienced before. So I took him into an indoor shooting facility where we trained. From that, Bedros said, what can I do for you? What can I do for you? What can I do for you? And as you know, I have my young nephew. He's 19 years old. My nephew is, I mean, he's awesome, he's amazing, but he's not very worldly, and he wants to get into the right style of training. He's 19, he picked up PX90. Yeah. He did it for like a year.
Right.
I was like, I think you're only supposed to do it for 90 days. And I asked Bedros to do me a personal favor. I said, Bedros, if there was one guy that you can introduce me to when I come to San Diego that would train my nephew, and I'll pay anything, I'll pay whatever it is, I just love my nephew, I believe in family, who would it be? And he said, you. And I want everybody to know this. This is the laws of reciprocity, and this is what we're going to talk about, the rite of passage. So you didn't ask for money, and you gave more than we ever expected. And for me, that is what's missing in society today. And that's really where this conversation came from, because we started looking at that. Like, you gave, and it made me feel like, well, I got to give something. And we start going back and forth with. So really the question comes down to is who gets more, the giver or the getter? Well, if you believe in the laws of reciprocity, and if you believe in these rite of passages that we used to go through, you understand honor, respect, graciousness, integrity, trust. You understand that. If you don't believe and if you don't practice in that, well, all of a sudden it gets blurred and we get takers and we get givers.
Yep.
And it, for me, again, the way that I look at it, is there has to be some demarcation mark. And there, I was sharing with you about rip and rear.
Yeah.
In my opinion, RIP, you got rank has its privileges. Rank has its privileges. I have the privilege because of my rank of doing business, because of my rank of paying the dues, of being here with you. I have that privilege to have that. But also, rank has its responsibilities. So you RIP, rank has its privileges, but then you rear, rank has its responsibility. I now have a responsibility, an obligation to return the favor that you've returned to me to somebody else who doesn't have it. But in American society, in Western culture, I think really, because I think even if you look at the Europeans, we're starting to neuter this. We're starting to say, everybody gets a trophy. Right. Everybody should have granted access to Ben because you should just give it. And I'm seeing the dilution of the Western man. I'm seeing the dilution of those. If you guys are 30, 40, 50, if you're at that age and you're thinking to myself, have I earned enough? Have I done enough? This is what you and I are talking about. Where is our rite of passage that says, I've done it? You became a professional bodybuilder. I knocked it out of the park and made seven figures one time. I met with the president of the United States. I've worked with all these global leaders. But have I done it? If you look at some of the other cultures, the Blood Indians in Canada, they have a demarcation mark that says, at this age, you go through this, and then you've done it. Gangs, inner cities, have a demarcation mark that says, if you do this, you get that.
Right. Even Judaism is like at 13, you're getting... bar mitzvah, and at 30, now you're officially a man, right?
That's
like,
right. Yeah. We don't have that, and entrepreneurs don't have that.
So, do you think that's why, not to interrupt you, but do you think that has to do with why we associate people typically of the Jewish faith of being so successful? Because they actually are so aware of their place and their respect for the elders who have accomplished so much more?
Without a doubt, I really do believe that. If you look at the Jewish faith, if you look at the LDS faith, if you look at, even let's take religion out of the conversation so those that are listening and watching don't think that we're being offensive. Let's just look at culture in and of itself. And we were talking about the samurai from the 12th century. I'm going to take everybody way back. But if you look at the samurai from the 12th century, we came out with the Bushido Code, the warrior way, the seven virtues of Bushido. That came during an eruption of corruption. And so during this eruption of corruption came this principle-based honor society that said, here is the mark you have to hit, here's the apprenticeship you have to do, and then here's your rite of passage if you go through this. Go back even further, we all watch the greatest movie in the world, all the man's movies, 300. 300, man, that was awesome. Yeah. What was there?
See it a thousand times.
Yeah, come on. But there was a demarcation mark, there was a rite of passage.
Right.
You look at the cowboy. So I'm from Boise, Idaho, originally Montana, via Alaska, so all big country, right? The Cowboy Code of Ethics was an unwritten rules. They were a set of rules and standards that said, here's how you treat a lady. Here's how you treat someone that treats you with respect. Here's how you defend and protect your rights. But it was all unwritten, and that honor is what kept us in line. Where do we have that today? We don't have that demarcation mark right now. Because again, it's all participation trophies. It's all, you should spend the time with me. You should give me this and you should give me that. I will honestly tell everyone here, you deserve nothing. You deserve nothing. You earn everything. And if we can get back into that, you've earned my respect because of the graciousness, the respect, the integrity, and the trust that you extended to my family. And what I call that, grit, graciousness, respect, integrity, and trust. You earn that, and for me, I'm beholden to that. And that's how you build business, that's how you build life. But as we struggle, I'm 48, you're 36. Yeah, I'm 48, you're 36. We start to ask ourselves, is the money in our pocketbook enough? Is the size that we have enough? What says that we've made it? Nothing right now.
Right. So do you think it's as simple as allowing us to reestablish some type of pecking order? Or is it, making people realize there has to be some standard of you have to give, you have to suffer, you have to struggle? What is the catalyst to get us back? In your opinion, you're obviously a very thoughtful human being. You're a very well-read man. when you're paying, what is the catalyst? Because, you know, I've been thinking about this for years and thinking about how do I create a rite of passage for my son to make you realize, hey, man, now you've earned your right to become a man. You've earned your right to become an adult. I didn't have that. This is why I struggled. This is why I, you know, literally had to run away from things and hide under this armor that I created, or that, you know, ultimately it was me running away from something. And I felt like that, once I fought through all those struggles, allowed me to create the man that I am. Without those things, I wouldn't be half the man I am. So I'm gracious for my struggles. I want my son to struggle. I want him to realize that you're not getting everything handed to you on a silver platter. What does it start with, you know, one, with us, and two, with culture, in allowing us to start creating this, you know, for lack of a better term, rite of passage?
Yeah. I think it does start with retraining the brain. You and I had talked earlier about a lot of people, especially men, during their 30s, 40s, and 50s, they start searching for answers, mm-hmm. and they start feeling like something's missing. Like, do I take up golf? Do I go hunting? Do I take up bodybuilding? I took up jujitsu at 40 years old. I was 40 years old, and I take up Brazilian jiu-jitsu because I was searching for something.
Yeah.
And I think it first starts with stop searching for answers and start training for the truth. And there's a difference. When we search for answers, we'll look for anyone and everyone to give it to us. But when we look inside of ourselves and we start with our standards today, we start with our legacy because there's a breakage in legacy. And so be the first one to set the legacy as a father, as a brother, as an uncle, as friends. Let's start that standard and that legacy together. And if we start retraining the brain and we start training for the truth, and here is the truth in my opinion. The truth is we've demasculated, we've neutered our men. Life is simple, but it's not easy. Yet we want to make everything easy now. No, I don't want it to be easy. I want it to be simple. I want to show them the path, but make them struggle for it a little bit, because you struggled, I struggled.
Yeah.
And that's what made you who you are.
Talk about demasculinization of men, because what makes a man, and how, you know, the confusion of that definition blurs our ability to truly attain it. Because I know there's been so many people saying, oh, you know, it's okay to cry, it's okay to laugh, a man must be strong. What in your eyes mostly allows us to be man, and what defines a man? A great man, not just a man. A great man.
A great man. And I love you say that. Working out with you this morning, we were talking about practice makes perfect. And
No.
Perfect practice makes perfect.
Right.
And so what I think the definition of a man is going to be defined by everyone's own moral compass and everyone's own family setting. And you just have to have that. But I believe that as a community of men, we need to agree that we seek out and search to accomplish things. By DNA, we were explorers. By DNA, we were conquerors. By DNA, we were warriors, all of us. And we need some type of battle. But a man, just like the samurai warrior, says humility with the backing of expertise. Not that you wield your sword and you can beat everyone on up. Not that you can run around and say, look at me. Lead with humility. Lead with love. But there's this old proverb, and I'm going to paraphrase it. The gardener and the warrior. In the samurai world, the gardener says, man, I would hate to be a warrior working in the garden. And the warrior says, you know what I would love to be? I would love to be the warrior that knows how to garden, but be prepared to go to battle. And that's what we need to be as men. We need to be able to work in the gardens of our own heads and our own hearts. You respect women. If you look at Marion Wayne, by the way, is John Wayne. If you guys don't know who that is, that's the Duke. John Wayne's original name was Marion Wayne. He really had the representation of what was a man. Yeah, he was chesty and he was big, but he cried on television. He never, ever hit a woman. Ever hit a woman. Ever. Never disrespected a lady. He stood for what was right. Too many of us as men are trying to figure out how to fit in. And we're trying to fit in so much that we're forgetting it's time for us to stand out. And it's time for us to stand out and say, I'm proud to be a man. I am a warrior working in a garden. And I'm planting all these fruits and all these roots of positivity. But man, I will take a stand if I see something wrong. And we need to take a stand together.
That's so important. And I think most men are afraid to stand up. Most men don't take ownership for taking responsibility for their life. They don't really take responsibility for their family. And from my perspective, that's a very important part of being a great man, is leading by example, taking responsibility for everything in your life and not putting ownership on other people. What are the solutions for people being able to begin the process of stepping up and becoming a man?
I think the solution is first admitting that you're searching for answers and now you want to commit to train for the truth is what I think the process is.
And where does that start?
It starts with this. It starts with the answer to this question. Who do you listen to? Who do you listen to? Who do you listen to as mentors? Who do I listen to as mentors? And if you don't know that answer, you're going to try to find it for everyone. So I'm just going to tell everybody, in my opinion, what the answer is. Who you listen to should be, you should listen to those who have been where you are and are where you want to go. There's two parts to that equation. So you're a professional businessman that represents his assets through his physicality. But I don't listen to this, I listen to this. You're a loving husband. I hear you talk about your children. And I've not yet once heard you cuss, but I promise you when you walk down the street, you command respect with your actions. So who do I listen to? If you and I are gonna have the man conversation, I am gonna listen to you. I already know that you've been in a similar situation where I was, and I know where you want, where I know you are where I wanna be in certain parts of my life. And I call it the rules of three. The rules of three is you surround yourself around, I was explaining just the other day to somebody, everybody looks at life like a hierarchy, like at the top and at the bottom. Take that hierarchy, flip it on its side, and now let's not look at top and bottom. Nobody is ahead of you, on top of you, nobody's behind you. They're just ahead. So if we flip it here, we're now just in units of time. So you start with defining, who do you listen to? You listen to those who are where you were and are where you want to be. You start training for the truth by emulating this. And then the rules of three. You find 1/3 of your friends of your network that are further ahead in that unit of time here. Why? Because they set the guidance, they set the rules, they set the standards and the vision for the future. 1/3 of your network is head to head with you, whether it's working out spiritually, faithfully, personally, financially, because they're the ones that drive you every day. And then the other third on this side is who you mentor up. That's who you mentor up and bring up. They're never below you and they're never above you. There's just people that are a little bit 5 minutes ahead.
Different skill set.
Different skill sets.
Yeah.
You took 1/3 of your committed day and you committed it to people, to mentorship. Mm-hmm. So then that allowed me to go, man, I'm going to take 1/3 of my committed day because you and I are, we're like this and we're going to drive each other.
Right.
I'm pulling from you and I'm giving to you.
Sure.
I'm looking at all this and going, dude, you got an amazing following. You got an amazing setup. And that pushes me to make that little extra lift, that little extra lift. And then 1/3 of our relationships throughout this day should be with people like Pedro, should be with people who are this unit of time,
right,
financially, spiritually, emotionally.
Right.
And if we align with that, we really rip and we rear. And when we rip and rear, man, we knock on wood, we look to the big man upstairs and we can knock it out.
How much has television and social media, in your perspective, shifted our mentors? Obviously, we get to look at these people and we're looking at what they decide to put out as reality, which is, you know, obviously a fabrication of the truth. How much do you think that's inhibiting our youth's ability to actually be great men because we're picking the wrong mentors?
Yeah.
We're motivated by the wrong things. Media has made us so motivated around material things. Like if you don't have the new shiny shoes, you're a chump. So thereby a man is more focused on what shoes you're wearing than what's actually going on in your brain and your heart. And I intentionally don't wear flashy things.
Right.
Like I'm not trying to be that guy who's like, hey man, look at me. I just got the brand new suit. I got the brand new shoes. I want people to like me for this guy,
yeah,
right? For the guy that's inside. And if you don't, I don't really care.
That's right.
It says more about you than it says about me. So I intentionally do that. I realized my following would probably be twice as big if I, you know, was the guy who had the nice car and the shiny shoes. And then but I'm like, man, I'd rather have that money somewhere that's actually doing something for me,
right,
than externally. So cultural values have shifted. Do you think it needs to start there? Like, do we need to shift the cultural values before we can actually start changing our underlying direction.
I do. And so back to your original question, which was like, how much has social media and media played an influence on this? Well, it's obviously played a massive influence. And here's the deal. I told you, like, I was not a fan of social media. Right. I was not a fan of that because I'm trying to be this purist. I'm trying to, like, no. But I discovered this. Our adversaries, your adversaries are also using social media to sell their wares, pitch their things, and tips and tricks and this and that. So we have to evolve and use those same tools, but for right versus wrong. We have to use those to expose the authenticity of you. It is my responsibility to post this podcast to my thousands of viewers because you are an authentic truth of ripping and rearing.
Right.
And you're an extension of me. We have those laws of reciprocity, the laws of edification. And so each and every one of you guys have that responsibility out there. But social media does play a major influence. It's just you can't get around it. There is a major influence.
It's huge. Yeah.
So instead of saying I'm going to be a purist and stay away from it, we should learn how to mitigate and manage is what we want to do. And then I'll share you, Dwight Eisenhower. So I'm a huge fan of General Patton and Patton on Leadership. You should definitely study Patton on Leadership. He was a phenomenal man, extremely insecure. That's why he didn't speak much. Everybody thought that he spoke more in his actions. He didn't speak because he had a very high-pitched voice and he was very insecure about it. But he built a persona around him that created a positive culture of doing the right thing. Dwight Eisenhower was another gentleman. He talked about leadership and he took out a big chain and he put it on a desk and he says, if I push this chain, which way does it go? The answer is you don't know because you're pushing it. He goes, if I pull this chain, which way does it go? Any way I want it to go. But if I build this chain with like-minded men that help craft and put each link together, which way does it go? Unlimited. It can go together with us because he helped build it. He helped craft it. He has no insecurity with it. We have to build the chain of authentic communicators that are men and community leaders and entrepreneurs that have a standard of principles that go beyond the pocketbook. The definition of success never includes money. The definition of success includes everything but money. Try to define success without money. Most people can't. The byproduct of your success is you will be healthy, wealthy, and happy.
So ultimately what you're saying is success comes before wealth, not wealth before success.
Absolutely.
I love it, man. So much great value to be added there. Now, you talk a lot about the mindset of success, and I love talking about that because I have thousands of listeners who are just ultimately trying to live the greatest version of themselves, like living their personal greatness. What are your three pieces of advice for men and women to begin manifesting their dreams? So you've lived a pretty awesome life, man. And I know that was all stuff that you've created. It's not stuff that was given to you. You've taken advantage of some pretty awesome opportunities. You've taken advantage of creating some pretty awesome opportunities. Tell me about what you think that three things people need to start doing to truly live their greatest life.
First and foremost, what you have to do is you have to aim for the sky. And if you hit a skyscraper, you're still doing okay, right? In 1989, my senior yearbook quote said, Donald Trump, I'm coming.
Seriously?
That was my
senior yearbook
quote.
You.
Circled that page and I mailed it to him. That was in 1989. After that,
that's awesome.
I mailed it to him. In 2003, The Apprentice comes out, and in 2003, there was 215,000 people that applied for that show, 11,000 face-to-face interviews, 250 callbacks, and then it got down to 50 of us. Head-to-head, what was the differentiator when it got down to the top 50 of us? I mailed him a letter, and I said, Donald Trump, I'm coming. That was my senior yearbook quote. It made it on Dateline because of that. You have to manifest it. What you have to do is you have to declare your audacious dreams. And you have to be unapologetic for it. You got to declare it. The second thing you do is you start being a one percenter today. You start being a one percenter today, everyone. And how do you be a one percenter? A one percenter is what you taught my nephew and his best bud this morning. You taught him a ton of information, right? Well, they're not going to be able to apply all of it today. So I told him, if you just apply 1% per day, 1% per day. Now, I'm a country kid, and I took country dumb all the way to the bank, and I was dumb enough to get rich, and this is what I figured out. If I get 1% better today, and then 1% better on top of that, I'm 2. Then I go from 2 to 4, 4 to 8, 8 to 16, 16 to 64, 64, exponentially. But let's just do simple math. If I'm only 1% better per day, in 365 days, I'm 365% better. So that's the second thing you do. Admit to yourself and give yourself permission that you can be a 1%er today.
How does that start?
That starts by looking beyond the obvious, and that's the final thing I'll tell you guys to do. Start looking beyond the obvious. If you look up my story, you will see my adversity. You will read about my adversity. If you look up my story, you will also know that I retrained my brain to see things. I was sharing with you, I made a very drastic mistake just recently. I made a very drastic mistake where I invested wrongly and I invested $100,000. It's gone. It's $100,000 gone. Man, people are coming to me and going, oh my God, that sucks. That's horrible. What about this? And I said, oh my God. And I got this big old smile on my face. I go, how blessed am I? How blessed am I that I have the ability to lose $100,000 and not worry about my mortgage? So you have to retrain your brain. When my mom and I and my two sisters were moving around and bouncing around, my mom would never say to me, life's down. She would say, hey, Troy, you know what? We're just in between success cycles. That's all we are.
Right.
We're just in between success cycles. How many of you are just in between success cycles? You're not failing. And that's the last thing. You showed me just this morning, extremely profound, extremely profound. In your unit of time and in your industry, do you guys train to completion? No, you don't train to completion. You train to challenge. Challenge yourself to fail. Fail early, fail often. Give yourself permission to, hey, I'm gonna fail, but don't fall down, fail up. Just keep failing forward. And you do it by looking at life from beyond the obvious, and you listen to people like you.
Man, your skill set is unbelievable, and I'm truly grateful to have met you and connected with you. What are the three books you recommend that everybody read?
Man, absolutely. Listen, readers are leaders.
I know you're a reader, man.
Total readers are leaders. And you have to know this, just like with working out. So I'm diagnosed ADHD, I'm dyslexic, and I'm colorblind. And so when people are like, how do you?
We live a similar life.
Oh, man. But I kept hearing readers are leaders, bro. Like how do I do that? Well, you just figure it out.
So I had a learning disability, a speech impediment, and I was obese as a kid. So it literally turned each one of them into my careers.
Yeah.
It's funny.
Here's what, we're totally going off the subject. Yeah. We're just staying on the subject. So here's what I'll tell you. What you did is what I did. I'm a huge fisherman, so I love fishing, right? And I love going to Hawaii. Hawaii's a great place to go.
Let's plan a trip, man. I'm in.
Let's go. Because what we're going to go is we're going to go target a fish called Ono.
Okay.
And Ono is O-N-O. In Hawaii, it's the most coveted fish there is. And Ono has many meanings. It means delicious. It means perfect. It means absolute, like sensational. And so it's a very coveted fish. And when I would catch this fish, the islanders were like, oh, Ono. Ono, guys, man, you got Ono. And I started thinking to myself, we need to start having our listeners, our viewers, and our life to be Ono, be perfect and delicious. How do we do that? We see opportunities, not obstacles. O-N-O. We see opportunities, not obstacles. Currently, your guys', some of your brains only see the obstacle.
Right.
And you don't see the opportunity. Start living the Ono life and start seeing the opportunity in the adversity.
Oh man, that's exactly what I say every day. Your greatest struggles develop your greatest character, right? As you seek struggles, and I say this to every one of my clients, is at the deepest depths of your biggest struggle, smile.
Yeah.
Knowing that you're becoming a greater version of yourself. And I think that's such a beautiful point to end with, man. Dude, I'm giving you a hug, man. That podcast always ends in a hug, buddy.
Man, I love it. I'm gonna give you my three books though, real quick.
Oh, yeah.
James Allen, As a Man Thinketh, 1902. Yeah. James Allen, As a Man Thinketh.
Yep.
Anything Napoleon Hill. In fact, I bid on the original books on Sotheby's, the 16 Lessons of Success. I bought those original books.
Wow.
They sit in my safe.
What'd that cost you, if you don't mind me asking? Was it crazy?
It was a pain.
Man, yeah,
it was
like
we're north of 40 grand on those ones.
I look every used bookstore that I come across, and like, I wonder if I could find like an old original copy of that, and I can never.
The energy, I'm not even lying to you, and I will let you read them. I will honestly, I have never.
I'm the biggest Napoleon Hill fan on the planet, man.
Like, please wear gloves. You gotta wear white gloves. Because I don't want the paper to get oiled.
Yeah, I've read that book literally every year since 2007, at least once a year, sometimes twice.
And here's what's going to blow your mind. There's a chapter that has not ever been released in the originals.
Wow.
Yeah. Like, there's a chapter that's never been that's in the originals, never been released. So anything Napoleon Hill,
yeah.
And then I would say...
And just add to that, in his voice is always way better than somebody else's voice.
Way better.
He just
better.
Has this ability, this energy, this passion that you're like, oh my God, I want to act right now. Like, it just comes through in his voice.
Oh, and then I would say, like, anything Aikido, and not that I'm a martial artist in Aikido, but Bushido Code, Sansu, The Art of War, or anything that has to do with the seven principles of Bushido, because that will really help round you out.
Love it, man.
Appreciate it, brother.
Where can everybody find you on social?
They can find me on social, TroyMcLean.com, TroyMcLean.com, TroyMcLean.com. I'm on Facebook, Twitter, and of course on your podcast.
And Troy's got an amazing educational platform that's been around for a while that's really crushing. You want to tell them what that is?
I do, yeah, you guys. I went on The Apprentice, made it all the way to the finals, and then I was fired for lack of education, so I decided to build an educational company. We have an online educational company that delivers your education with our collaboration. We have 40s of thousands of users delivering online education through testing and measuring and demarcation marks, because it's time to stop watching YouTube and it's time to test and measure our clients for performance to perfection and not just giving them the participation award. And so we created an entire learning management system.
You can find that on TroyMcLean.com.
They can.
Okay.
For sure.
Awesome. Thank you, guys.